Hello, this is Hugo Rifkind. Our regular columnists have had the day off today because we've been listening to Keir Starmer's former chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney, giving evidence to MPs about the appointment of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. It was a moment of major jeopardy for the Prime Minister and a rare opportunity to hear from the man who masterminded Labour's rise to power. So, to unpack what McSweeney said, I'm handing over to Danny Finkelstein from our sister podcast, How to Win an Election, who is joined by Tom McTague from The New Statesman and Ollie Cole from The Times.
We've been listening to two box office Foreign Affairs Committee sessions this morning over the Peter Mandelson affair. I'm Daniel Finkelstein. First, there was Philip Barton, the former head of the Foreign Office, who said he was told to get on with the appointment of Lord Mandelson. Then there was Morgan McSweeney, the Prime Minister's former chief of staff, admitted making mistakes and said he assumed wrongly that Mandelson was telling the truth about his links to Jeffrey Epstein and then called the revelations a knife through his soul. We're going to get into this with Tom McTague, the editor of The New Statesman, and Ollie Cole. But Ollie, you're in the studio with me now. What did you make of what we've just heard?
So I think there's a lot of interesting insights into how those decisions were made, both in the number 10 operation and also in terms of what was received by the Foreign Office. We heard earlier from Philip Barton about how, you know, essentially he saw this as a pretty, you know, extraordinary appointment in terms of how quickly it all needed to be done, you know, how the timelines came about, the fact that the vetting wasn't done until after the appointment of or the announcement of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. But you've got essentially there two sessions which I think everyone on either side of this question over whether Keir Starmer can sort of survive the day without getting an ethics probe and this, that and the other can take something from it. I think, you know, Philip Barton managed to sort of differentiate between the different types of pressure that the Foreign Office felt they were under. Morgan McSweeney did the same, and that's the sort of line that Number 10 are trying to take in their defence of the Prime Minister's words last week. But, you know, both bits of that are very interesting in terms of it did rest with the Prime Minister to make this decision, and that's the thing that in terms of Labour backbenchers and the public at large, they can't get away from.
Tom McTague, what's your top line? What did you make of that session?
Well, I mean, it's exhausting, isn't it, to go to combine that with what we saw last week. But I mean, I think ultimately it didn't move the dial in my estimation as much as it did last week, where I think we got closer to the truth here that you know, what was going on is that Starmer has overreacted to something in an attempt to defend himself. And I think he's found himself in more trouble as a result of the decision to sack Ollie Robbins rather than, if he had just put his hands up and said, look, I will get to the bottom of this. I'm not sure what went on and why. I will ask Ollie Robbins. But ultimately, as much as Morgan McSweeney said today, this was a political decision and it was a wrong one. And I take responsibility for that.
Have we now heard everything there is to know about this? Surely there can't be anything about this saga we now don't know. What on earth is going to happen to this story? Is it going to peter out, as maybe members of the public want it to do? Or are we going to see more parts coming out over the next few days?
So I think there are a few sort of key things still to come, which is, one, I would be surprised if at some point the Foreign Affairs Committee don't ask Matthew Doyle for evidence, either in written form or to stand as a witness like Morgan McSweeney has today. He was the Director of Communications who, in the due diligence report that went to the Prime Minister, it was said was satisfied with the responses that came from Peter Mandelson. You've also then got, obviously, this police investigation hanging over the whole thing, which would show you later in the year, perhaps, what his answers to those questions were. And after Parliament comes back with a new King's Speech after the local elections, you've also got the next tranche of Mandelson files to come out of the Cabinet Office. So it's possible that it goes away for the rest of this week, but in the weeks and months ahead, it's definitely going to rear its
head. And you don't worry about losing the readers?
I think it is a genuinely interesting thing to look at, because it goes, I think, to the sort of sense of who Keir Starmer is as a person, a man who is, you know, sold himself as across the detail, a man who has said that he will clean up politics, that things would change in terms of that number 10 operation, a man who had a massive majority at the last election and now is struggling pretty much to get his backbenchers on side with any difficult decision he needs to make. So I think this issue in particular, even though it does really get into the technical aspects of security vetting and this, that and the other, the bigger picture is it's about the political judgment and the future of the Prime Minister.
Tom, what was interesting about this interview wasn't today with the Select Committee wasn't just the discussions about the issues and discussion about Morgan McSweeney's phone. Right at the end came a discussion about Labour Together and Peter Madelson's attitude to it, and the fact that he had actually not been in much of a supporter of what Morgan McSweeney was doing when Jeremy Corbyn was still the leader, that he hadn't supported Keir Starmer's leadership. It was a reminder that this is not a politically neutral scandal, that it has basically pulled in the major factions, rather different ones actually, Blairites and, I suppose if you can call them that, Starmerites or Morgan McSweeneyites, however you want to phrase it. And it has pulled them together and, I suppose, produced a situation where part of the party is in trouble with the other half of the party. So give us an idea, as the editor of the New Statesman, the effect this is going to have and has had on Labour's internal politics.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because even in your description, Daniel, you're talking about sort of McSweeneyites and Starmerites. And then the more you sort of think about it, you think that they are different, you know, even within that kind of, you know, sort of narrow band of ideologies. But I think it's a really important point that you've honed in on, which is that this is playing out not just in terms of undermining the Prime Minister's position and his authority within the party and within Parliament, but it's also playing into the leadership contest. And in a way that I think broadly is delegitimizing the right of the party in all its various guises. And that is a really significant thing, you know, because if you think back only a couple of months, Wes Streeting was being talked about very, very heavily as someone who had, you know, fallen out with the Prime Minister and who wanted to run in a leadership contest. It was sort of widely speculated across all of the media. And today he looks in a much, much weaker position because of his links to Peter Mandelson. Now, Peter Mandelson's links to the right of the party are obvious. They came out in today's session. There was discussions about lunches and dinners. And already online, there is a kind of speculation that the committee didn't get to the nub of the matter because there were other dinners and other lunches going on in other people's houses on the right of the Labour Party.
Has apart from the personalities involved, who clearly do come from the right of the party, has the left developed a critique? I suppose you could say this is, you know, about Peter Mandelson saying they could be intensely relaxed about rich people, and this was the Labour Party being too relaxed about rich people, that this involved a billionaire at its heart and people taking holidays, and this has now dragged in the whole of the Labour leadership, and that fundamental position is wrong. Do you notice a sort of strong view, not just about the people, but about the philosophical positioning of the Labour Party and what's been revealed about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think that what you just said gets to the heart of it, that there is a feeling that, New Labourism has sort of lost any sense of purpose and direction, lost its soul in a way, and is revealed to have just become about power and money. And you do see in the figure of Tony Blair, somebody who seems to a lot of Labour members to sort of embody that. And they compare him, don't they, with somebody like Gordon Brown, who has not gone down that road. But I think just to add a couple of other layers to that, my sense has always been that Keir Starmer has, lacked this. It's not a unique analysis, but has lacked a kind of vision and has lacked a way of describing it. And McSweeney was able to do that for him. McSweeney's loss has robbed Starmer of some of that clarity. And who is standing here in for McSweeney? Who is more dominant now? It's these figures of Ed Miliband and Andy Burnham and the soft left of the party who share an analysis of the mistakes of this government. They think that they are too focused on kind of old New Labour ideas that no longer apply. Now, for right or wrong, there is a kind of clarity to a kind of Ed Miliband position and a consistency, which is more in tune with the Labour Party members, than the vision put forward by McSweeney. So what is also being revealed here is the preferences, the instincts of the Labour Party.
Well, Tom McTague, thank you very much indeed. Ollie, I've got one more question for you. You're off back to reporting on all this the moment this is over. Tom, when he was talking just now, referred to the future Labour leadership contest, as if that was a given that that would exist. Is that where the story goes next?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, this is essentially, as Tom alluded to a little earlier, last week the session with Ollie Robbins pushed Keir Starmer's premiership right to its limits. Now, I think, you know, the political nature of today's debate later and vote later as to whether to refer him to the Privileges Committee by the Conservatives and other opposition parties, he will probably survive. There's a three-line whip on the back benches and none of them want to sort of go into May's elections with their sort of Labour Party machine not necessarily backing them. But this is a stay of execution, I think, at this point. This is, you know, you have a few political events coming up, including those May elections, which are going to feel pretty tough and pretty lonely if you are a Labour Member of Parliament. And when you look up from them and you look to number 10, the question is, do I believe that the person, the operation that is in there right now is the one that can lead us back out of it? And I think increasingly for MPs, the answer to that question is no. Increasingly, however, the question for MPs that they can't answer is, well, then who next? And that is where that discussion then goes.
Well, Tom McTague, editor of The New Statesman, thank you very much. And of course, to my colleague here in the studio, Ollie Cole, The Times newsroom reporter.
Thanks very much to Danny Finkelstein, who you can, of course, hear on our sister podcast, How to Win an Election, every week. Normal service resumes tomorrow.